It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 890 for the 12th of July, 2024. This week, no matter how long or complex a password is, it's useless if a scammer gains access to it. One of the most beneficial aspects of passkeys is that they can be compromised only if the crook gains access to the computer or the smartphone where they are stored. In short circuits, Microsoft Outlook is facing more competition than it has seen in quite some time, and some of the strongest competition comes from the newly renovated Thunderbird and its stable of more than 2,000 add-ons. And anyone who is displeased by Microsoft's decision to add advertisements, which they call recommendations, to the Start menu and elsewhere will welcome relief from two open-source apps that stifle them. In the simplest terms possible, it is important to switch to passkeys and away from passwords as soon as you can. The limiting factor today is that passkeys are not yet in widespread use, but they are far more secure than passwords. The primary problem with passwords is that no matter how secure it is, a password is useless if a scammer obtains it. Even if the password you use for a bank is uppercase Z, lowercase U, lowercase S, numeral 7, asterisk, uppercase X, uppercase R, lowercase S, uppercase L, numeral 3, uppercase J, uppercase Q, lowercase Q, numeral 3, numeral 2, pound sign, lowercase W, ampersand, it's still vulnerable. That password is obviously so long and so complex that it's likely civilization would end before somebody could guess it. But if somebody sets up a scam site that looks like your bank's site and tricks you into going there, you'll hand the password to the scammer in all of its complex glory. You'll be safer if you have enabled two-factor authentication, which far too few banks have implemented, but passkeys are even better. They are still the exception, though, but passkeys are currently in use some places. The passkeys directory, you'll find a link to it on the TechBiter Worldwide website, offers some clues. Here are some of the sites where you can use a passkey today. Adobe, Amazon, Apple, Best Buy, Bitwarden, CVS, eBay, Home Depot, Lowe's, Microsoft, PayPal, Sony, Target, and really quite a few more. But there are also a lot of sites that should be using passkeys that aren't. Most banks, for example. Most streaming services. 1Password. And even Facebook are examples of those. Passkeys are more secure than passwords for several reasons. First, they are not stored on servers, but on your computer or your smartphone. Passkeys are unique to each device, meaning that the passkey for Adobe on your desktop computer will be different from the passkey used for Adobe on your smartphone. Passkeys are usually generated using cryptographic algorithms. They can be revoked or changed easily if they're compromised. The passkey replaces a password with a cryptographic key pair. One key is public and is registered with the app or the website you're using. The other key is private. It is stored only on your computer or mobile device. The key pair handles the authentication process between your device and the app or website without any input from the user. So I have enabled passkeys for every website I can. When sites offer the option, I almost always take time immediately to set it up. In the meantime, I have enabled two-factor authentication for those sites that offer it, but haven't yet progressed to passkeys. Passkeys aren't vulnerable to phishing attacks. You can't tell the scammer what your private key is because it doesn't ever leave your device, and you probably won't even know yourself what it is. If an attacker breaches a website, they may get your public key. That's okay, no problem. It's useless without the associated private key. And it's not possible to use the public key to reverse engineer the private key. The private key is stored only on your device. It is not shared with an app or website when you connect. The public key is stored on the website, and you could actually publish it on the front page of the New York Times without creating a security problem for yourself. You might see one small problem here, and this is what it is. If somebody steals your mobile device and is able to log in, well, then the crook can use your smartphone to access your accounts using passkey authentication. That makes it absolutely essential that you have a complex password for the phone, or that you use a biometric ID, touch or face ID, for example. Even if someone manages to find and copy your private key, it won't work on any other device other than the one you created it on. Passkeys are linked to the device that generated them and to the app or website they were created for. A spoofed site won't pass the verification check, so your login will fail on a spoofed site even if the scammer fools you into going there. Most sites allow users to establish multiple sign-in methods, so even sites that support passkey usually will still support standard passwords. Just be sure that you set up two-factor authentication, if you can, on any site where you still have an old-fashioned password. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, not everybody loves Outlook. Possibly one could go a little further and say that some people loathe Outlook. Microsoft's email client is ubiquitous in business settings, and it is what I used when I worked for a large company, but I never did really like it. Outlook is on my computer these days because I subscribe to Microsoft 365, but it's not the application I use for email. There are a few competing applications, such as Spark for $60 to $100 a year, Canary Mail, which ranges from free to $50 a year, and Shortwave, which ranges from free to $290 per year. But Thunderbird, which is free, open source, with donations requested, is often an overlooked choice that shouldn't be ignored. Versatile on its own, extensions make Thunderbird even better. Thunderbird doesn't have the most beautiful user interface, but it is among the most customizable email clients around. The Bat, which sells for $50 to $60 and is from Moldova's RIT Labs, probably has more options, but it's a bit difficult to set up. Thunderbird's interface uses tabs to combine your email, calendar, and contacts into a single interface, but it's the add-ons that allow users to modify it by adding functionality that provides features missing from the core application. Mozilla's latest update for Thunderbird is to version 115, and it has a lot of welcome new features. It can be linked to a Google Calendar and display a summary of events in the right column if you wanted to. The search function at the top of the window is a welcome feature, especially for those of us with multiple email accounts. Thunderbird monitors my personal account, a TechBiter account, a special account I use for banks, and an external account for a client. Also my Gmail and Outlook.com accounts, and my internet service provider's account, which I hardly ever use. Some of these are set up as POP3 accounts, and others use IMAP. You can use either or both at any time in Thunderbird. Search in most email applications examines only one account at a time. Thunderbird can search all accounts simultaneously, which is useful if you can remember the sender or a few bits of information from a message, but not which account received it. The search bar also works in the address book, but Calendar uses a slightly different approach. I have set up tabs for email, the address book, and calendar, but there are also tabs for tasks, chat, and settings. Any of these can be opened on demand or pinned to the interface. Chat is somewhat limited, working only with IRC, Matrix, Odnoklassniki, and XMPP. In other words, you can't use it as a replacement for Facebook Messenger, and Odnoklassniki is a Russian social network. Thunderbird has a lot of settings, about 50 in the general section, around 20 in the composition tab, more than 20 in privacy and security, several in the chat tab, about 40 on the calendar section, and nearly 70 settings for each email account. New users will find some of the defaults selected by the developers aren't to their liking. That's all to be expected with any application. Where Microsoft makes some modifications easy, many difficult, and some impossible, Thunderbird gives the user access to nearly everything. If there's something you don't like, there's probably a way to change it. Create a free account at Mozilla Connect where you can submit ideas for consideration, discuss various Mozilla products, and find ways to change the settings that you've been unable to figure out on your own. And for everything else, there are add-ons. More than 2,000 add-ons are provided on Mozilla's website. Many are free, others have modest fees. You'll also find dozens of themes that change the overall appearance. Currently, I have just 6 add-ins enabled. Bitdefender installs a toolbar that monitors messages for potential threats and spam. Other settings can be modified in the Bitdefender control panel and can only be enabled or disabled in the Thunderbird add-on manager. In other words, you can't remove it as long as Bitdefender itself is installed. Although Thunderbird has built-in message filtering options, Filterquilla offers some additional useful options, particularly for actions to take if a message fulfills the filter's conditions. But there are also some additions to the usual filter functionality, such as the ability to add regex matching to both the subject line and the body text of the message. Mail Merge adds the ability to create a mailing list and then create a series of personalized messages. It also adds the ability to include personalized attachments with each message or one attachment that is included with all messages. One use case might involve sending statements to clients where each client receives the statement for their specific account. Send Later is crucial for anybody who frequently realizes that a promised attachment isn't really attached, or that an important point was omitted, and they realize this only after sending the message. The extension delays all messages for a set period. I set the delay to 2 minutes, but if needed, the delay can be skipped. There are also options to schedule messages to be sent at any specific future date and time. Text Marker remedies one shortcoming Thunderbird has, the inability to highlight words with a background color. Thunderbird allows users to change the foreground color of text easily, but changing the background color for a word changes it for the entire message. Text Marker lets the user choose up to 10 favorite colors that can then be used to highlight text sections. And unlike most email programs, Thunderbird doesn't enable typographic quotes by default. Unicodify takes care of that and makes smart quotes the default. An autocorrect feature that's currently in beta makes other changes, such as replacing 2 dashes with an M dash and some decimals with actual fractions. The more than 2,000 add-ons perform the magic of making Thunderbird, which is already capable of great things, able to do even more. Being a company that always attempts to serve the best interests of its customers, Microsoft noticed that many users crave more advertisements. After extensive research, the company concluded that Windows users would be well served by advertisements in the Start menu. But instead of calling them advertisements, Microsoft terms them recommendations. Besides the recommendations, Microsoft also seasons the operating system with other ads. Recommendations. But perhaps you're in that tiny minority of Microsoft customers who feel these advertisements recommendations are intrusions and would prefer not to have them. Because Microsoft wants to please everyone, it undoubtedly makes it easy for that small contingent of users to turn off the recommendations, doesn't it? Well, of course it doesn't. You'll also find recommendations in the File Explorer, lock screen, tips, Bing search results, the Edge search bar, and more. If you look hard enough through the operating system and modify a variety of settings, you'll be able to disable a lot of them. But maybe you'd like to make the ads go away without all that fuss. One option would involve using another application such as Stardock's Start 11, which is what I use in place of the Start menu. I selected Start 11 not because it eliminates ads, although it does, but because I like the way it works. As a side benefit, Start 11 also eliminated the recommendations. If you otherwise like what Microsoft has done with the Start menu and you don't want to pay for an application like Start 11, take a look at GitHub, where you'll find two free open source applications that cut the clutter. You'll find links to both of them on the TechBiter Worldwide website. Oh Frick, Go Back is one way to politely decline Microsoft's kind offer of more recommendations. Download the current version from GitHub, install it. If you want to see the source code, it's available too. And it's not an all-or-nothing decision. If you want to remove the Start menu recommendations but keep the personalized ads, you can. Also check out WinPilot. It's the other option. Both apps perform essentially the same tasks by making changes in the registry. After running either app, you'll be prompted to restart the computer so that the changes are activated. If you later decide that you're experiencing a severe shortage of recommendations, just run the app again and restore those that you want to see. Oh, and just for the record, Microsoft, if it looks like an ad, if it acts like an ad, if it's paid for like an ad, a recommendation is really just an ad with a fancy name. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.